Hello and welcome everybody to today's episode. I am extremely honored to talk to Akanksha Monga today. And for those of you who don't know her, Akanksha is a former consultant and LinkedIn employee who turned into a full-time traveler and travel content creator about 1.5 years ago when she decided to leave her corporate job and to pursue her dreams of traveling the world. Today, she's the fastest growing travel content creator in India and has an audience of over 1.2 million followers. Akanksha's Instagram alone has more than 800,000 followers who watch her traveling the world. Additionally, she's a TEDx speaker and she was just featured on the cover of the latest issue of Forbes India, which shared her story of breaking the taboo of solo traveling for Indian women. Okay, Akanksha, thank you again for making the time. It's super exciting that we get to talk. I know it's early in the morning for you.
Thank you so much. Not as early anymore. It's 10, so I'm good to start. Otherwise, it won't reflect very well on me if I call 10 a.m. very early. So,
okay,
I'm more than happy to start. No, I'm excited to be here.
Cool. Well, then let's dive right in. I think, I know we talked about this before, but just love it that one specific story that you shared on your TEDx talk, I think it was in your humble beginnings, is that you went knocking door to door in, and correct me again if I say this wrong, Udaipur.
Yes, that's perfect.
To pitch like your Instagram to hostels. Basically, your goal was that they would let you stay maybe like a night and give you like a warm meal. And thinking about your Instagram now, it seems a little bit crazy.
Yeah, honestly, now that you say it like that, it does seem crazy because back when I was there, what happened is that Udaipur was the first time that I decided to kind of travel solo by myself, which is something that's not very common in India. So it was already like a big thing to do that. But in addition to doing that, I also didn't tell anybody that I only had a place to kind of stay for one night. And that is something that I'd gotten also after like emailing and messaging a lot of hostels and hotels saying that, you know, I basically was pitching my services to them in terms of like maybe copywriting or taking pictures for the hostel. I had an Instagram, which was very, very small at that time. So I would say it almost felt, I'm guessing to them as well, not very significant. So it was always kind of like saying that, hey, I would, of course, I can put pictures and stuff of you, your hostel and recommend it on my page, but I can also help you guys do, you know, like help you with your website, etc. And the hostel that offered me a stay was just for one night. I was like, okay, I have one night in my hand. So one night's bed and food is taken care of. And the rest of the nights, I'm just going to figure it out when I get there. Because at least I've got, you know how people say that you've got one foot in the door and then you should just like take that opportunity and then figure out the rest. So that's kind of what I did because it is slightly far away from Delhi. So I'd already spent that money that I had on like the transportation. So I didn't really have more to spend while I was there. And yeah, so what ended up happening was that after the first night, which I genuinely did hope that within the time of me leaving to the first night being there, I thought, okay, I'm going to figure something else out. And by then I'm sure I'd have a stay, but that didn't end up happening. Expectations and reality didn't match. And then by the second day, I had no place to stay at night. So I remember asking like the hostel that I was staying at and telling them that, hey, can I leave a little bit of like my bag and stuff here? And I'm going to figure out where I'm going to stay and then I'm going to come back and get it. So I feel like I set an intention. And then the whole day I was like, you know what, this is going to be a fun day. I get to see Udaipur in a very different way that people wouldn't have seen, which is just basically figuring out different areas that have good hostels and just, you know, going and checking them out. And later on, I can maybe even do a review on all of them, considering I've been to almost all the hostels now over here. I ended up going from one hostel to another and kind of just like talking to the manager or the person who's working there. And they're always super friendly, right? People working at hostels. And I would just like kind of talk to them and be like, hey, so I'm like working on my travel.
Give me your pitch.
It would be like, hi, I'm working on my travel blog right now. I'm a budding travel blogger in the making. And I've also been writing a lot for Tripoto, which is basically a big travel company in India. And I used to write like reviews and stuff for destinations for them. So, and it's well known. So I said that, you know, I would say that I also write for Tripoto And I can definitely help your hostel by writing about you on, like, when I'm doing my blog on Tripoto. But in addition to that, I can also write for your hostel. I checked your Instagram page and I checked your website, and I feel like a couple of things are lacking, and I feel like I can help with that. And all I need is just, I need to stay here for 2 days. You can give me whatever dorm room you have, and I can have like the same meals that your staff has. And yeah, that's all I'd need in return for fixing your website and your Instagram. And yeah, so I felt like as soon as I feel like I said that there's something wrong with your Instagram and website, they would listen and they would be like, okay, what does she have to say? So I did do my research. I went to a couple of only nice ones because I also felt that if I'm recommending something, it should be good. So I went to the nicer ones and I told them what's wrong as well, because by the end of the day, I did study marketing and finance. So I did understand that there were certain gaps. So yeah, so I just told them that. I would tell them, say, for example, the hostel that I finally ended up kind of accepting my proposal, they had a beautiful terrace, but they had, and that overlooked like the entire city and you could see the sun coming up. It was beautiful, but they had absolutely nothing about that on their website or on their Instagram. Like the entire thing was focused on like the themes of the room. So I kind of spoke to them and I said that is probably not the best way to position your hostel. It should be like people look for these like one standout things that you should probably point out, that you have the highest, one of the highest rooftops. People would come because of that. And then they were just, I guess they thought that I make sense and they let me stay for a couple of days. But there, I stayed there for 3 days and got a warm bed and a warm meal. And yeah, it was rest is history. So everything, it was really cool. But I've never actually shared my pitch with anyone. So that's really cool.
That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, I also worked in went door to door knocking, like trying to sell. And so I can kind of like emphasize, like, but your pitch is super convincing. So like hard to believe that a lot of hostels turned you down in the beginning.
Yeah, I think a lot of them were also full because I was there at a very good time for them. So a lot of them were just full as well. So they were like, you know, we can't lose a bed because there's so many backpackers who are coming and we have like one bed left. So a lot of them were full. The one that I got was very nice. It was just slightly not like in the main center of the city, which is why I think they had like space. But I'm so glad they did, because that is what really catapulted my entire journey, because I could create a lot of content there and I had like, now I had like one strong hostel in my portfolio, so to say. So yeah, that helped.
And at the time you were still working, right? Full time?
No, at that time I was actually in uni.
Okay, so you were studying.
Yeah, I was studying. So yeah, I still had it was before COVID, it was pre-COVID. So yeah, I'm a COVID graduate. So I started my job.
Yeah.
When the whole COVID shebang was happening. So, yeah.
Well, okay, that's a long time ago. So like a lot has changed since.
And a lot, a lot has changed.
You don't have to go knocking on doors anymore.
But I would say I did enjoy it. The thrill of it is very different from what I do now. But I mean, both are fun and amazing.
How is it now? You have this big audience on Instagram. I can imagine you have like partnerships with hostels or hotels or whatever. Like how do you, I guess, approach a trip now compared to then?
I think now it's a bit more structured than then, because I feel like now with my content, there's a lot more responsibility because there's so many people watching. So the responsibility also increases. You know, back then I did feel that if I stay at a place or a hostel, that's just fine or okay, it's okay. But like the more number of people that join, the more responsibility that I also feel to give out the right information, because people, I sometimes don't realize how seriously people take my recommendations. So it's a reminder for me as well. Every time I meet someone somewhere and they're like, yeah, we're here because of you. And I'm just like, oh, wow. Because they saw some story of mine where I wasn't even recommending it, was probably just saying that I'm here. Not saying it's whether it's good or bad, just saying I'm here. So that kind of made me realize as well that there is a lot of responsibility of giving like the best, most accurate information that I can. So I now do my level best in terms of the research and the planning that goes into outreach. So I mean, it's still similar, but it's just that it's become way more structured and a lot, like it's not as hard work, as it's not a lot of hard work as compared to like knocking on doors, but now it's like knocking on emails and Instagram DMs. There's a lot of sliding in DMs that happens because I have to, yeah, basically reach out to different hostels and travel companies. But like I said, it's way more structured. So in Udaipur, it was like I was there and I thought, okay, let's just see what happens. I didn't go by the things that are the best to do. I went by the things that I have the money to do, which meant very few things, and most of the other ones were free. And the last thing, even the hostel was something that was extremely, extremely budgeted. So now I think it's more about the best things that I could do, even if it's a little bit more offbeat. So I'm not very restricted in those ways, but it is definitely more structured. So I think the recent trip I was mentioning that you mentioned earlier that I ended up taking recently with a friend of mine was amazing because that was completely unplanned. We did that in Turkey where we asked random strangers at the airport choose like a number between 1 to 4. And we decided 4 random destinations within Turkey, which had no sort of like, we didn't know anything about what that destination has. Sorry.
You were already in Turkey, right? You were already in Turkey.
Yeah, correct.
And then yes. You wanted to like just go off for an adventure, or how did you like start? Like, how did this idea cross your mind?
It has a sad backstory. The sad backstory is that I was supposed to go to. So we had our planned, well-planned, thought-out trip, which was we were going to Northern Cyprus, which is still considered to be like Turkey still considers it to be a part of Turkey. And so it was I could go with my Turkish visa over there. But there was some complication at the airport, which made it impossible for me to re-enter Turkey again because I had a single entry visa. And I didn't know I would have to go through immigration again because I thought Northern Cyprus is a part of it. So I wouldn't have to go through the immigration again and get my visa stamped, etc. So at the airport, they were like, yes, if you go, you're not going to come back and you're going to have to fly out from India, from Northern Cyprus, which meant that a lot of my stuff that was in Istanbul would be left behind because I was living there for a month. And number two, the flights from Northern Cyprus to India was super expensive. So we had to take a very quick decision right there, right then. But I've gotten very used to, I feel like, very terrible, bad airport experiences now. So we were pretty calm and we were just like, yeah, nothing we can do. It's like, you know, the cards dealt to us today sucks. So we're just going to have to figure it out. And so we couldn't go. The flight took off and we were there. And then we thought, okay, might as well. Now that we're at the airport, there are two options. Either we go back home and that's really sad, or we just like, we're at the airport. You can't go back home from the airport. You've got to go somewhere. So we thought, okay, let's play this game, which is, and like, we were really tired of making all the decisions since the morning, right? Because we had to decide whether to go, not go, play out all those options. So we were really exhausted. So we thought, let's not take the decision ourselves, but let's let other people take the decision for us. So we decided, we found the cheapest flights on going within Turkey, so like domestic flights within Turkey, and we came out, we got like 4 destinations. We checked the weather because we did want to go to a place that isn't like
you love
raining or
by now, right?
I was saying
you love the warm weather.
Yeah, I love the warmth, and I also feel like it was monsoonish season, so okay. It could have been rainy at some places. So we just quickly checked the weather, but nothing about what we could do at the place. So we just had like these random destinations come up, the cheapest flights, good weather. And we picked like 4. Julian was the friend I was traveling with. He assigned 4 random numbers to the destination so that I wouldn't know which number is what. And then we went and started asking strangers at the airport, people who were just flying out, that just to pick a random number so that we could have a vote. And then whatever the number is, we have to go with that and we just have to book the flight. So I think that was really fun because that was after a long time where I traveled not based off like a very structured trip, because once people picked a flight, we bought the flight and then we had to wing it. Like we got this one, we found like 1 Airbnb because there was absolutely nothing left on the same day if we had to book something for the same night. We negotiated a good price because we were like, hey, no one's staying at your place. If we're booking it, please give us a good price.
You like call them?
Sorry? No. On Airbnb. Yeah. I think that's a great hack. I always tell people to use that if they're like a bit more flexible with their dates, to just be like, text them and be like, can I get a negotiated price or whatever? So got a random Airbnb, which was really far away from everything. Even the Airbnb owner was like, don't come here without a rented car. And we were like, neither of us like to drive, so that's not happening. And we had no idea what we're going to do. Our flight got delayed. We were supposed to reach there by around 7 p.m. We reached at 1 a.m. And yeah, so it was like this trip where we had no idea. We turned up and we were like, okay, like now let's figure out what we can do, because we'd already spent so much money on the other trip. So there was also a restriction of spending, not wanting to spend too much money. So it really felt like we've gone back to the old days of just figuring it out while you're there. And it was so much fun.
That's amazing. And at the airport, how many people did you ask?
Oh, I think we set a goal of asking over, I think around 8 or 9 people, if I'm not wrong. Yeah, 8 or 9 people. Yeah. It was hard though. I feel like a lot of Turkish people aren't very like comfortable quickly talking. So I had to really strategize of who to ask, who'd be comfortable. So yeah, it was really fun.
It sounds amazing. And yeah, you just said it, you're going back to the old days, like it's a little bit more unstructured. One thing I think, or like one milestone, I feel like when like looking at your profession now and like back then, is quitting your day-to-day job and kind of like taking the risk of traveling full-time. To me, that sounds super scary, and maybe to other people too, like no matter if it's like, you know, creating content for traveling or anything that like you're passionate about. How was that moment for you?
Yeah, when I started this on, it was always something that I did on the side to keep my sanity intact, because I worked at Bain. I was a consultant. I was working in consulting. And that was at that point of time, my biggest goal to, you know, go higher up in the ranks of, you know, when it comes to consulting. And I did really like it in the beginning. And I felt like, okay, this is what I want to do. But I feel like this, the longer it went, and as my side hustle also kind of kept going, there were like two things that happened. Number one was that I kind of realized that my strong point lies in the creative side. So it's like I was definitely using both the left and the right side of my brain, but there was one that was stronger than the other, which is the case for most people. But I think it just took me a little longer to figure that out, because only when I was hit with all the numbers and the Excel did I realize that I'm more of a people's person, more of someone who likes to talk and be in front, like, you know, all of those things. So I really enjoyed that. And so I think that's why I started loving my side hustle a lot more. And it became like this when it would be weekends and I would be working on like my page. So which meant obviously traveling. So what I'd do is, because I joined, like I said, when it was COVID, which meant that the entire world went remote. So by the time I started my job at Bain, they'd already gone completely fully remote. But at the same time, the offices hadn't opened up, but the world had started opening up a bit. So it wasn't the peak COVID time when I started. So I just kind of decided, I was actually the first one in my office to do this, that I moved to Goa, which is basically like a state in southern part of India. It's beautiful. It's a really nice beach town. It's beautiful. So I moved there, and because I thought, you know, why do I still need to live in a city, which is where my office was, if my job's remote? Like, it'll be so nice to work from a beach shack. So, I mean, if I'm doing Excel, might as well do it by the beach, you know, that's much nicer. So,
nice.
So I did that. That was, I think, the starting point of like the bug that kind of bit me after that, which was, you know, creating content on the side. So I would wake up really early. I was just few days ago going through my stories from like 2020, and I was looking at how I would wake up at like 7 a.m., go out, go to the beach, go for a hike or something, because my work would start around 10. That's when I'd have my first check-in call with the team. So from 7 to 10 or 6:30 to 10, I would be like out, I would film, I would, yeah, just like travel around. And then once my work would get over is when I would sit on like the editing and stuff. And for the longest time, honestly, it didn't feel like work. It always felt like a hobby, you know, like something when you paint or you draw or people do something for recreation, they feel very, very, very good. So that's how I felt. And I think then eventually I realized that why do I need to restrict this mindset of it just being like a side hustle? Why can't it be my main gig of sorts? So, but it was still very scary. So I'm not going to lie. The first thing when I transitioned from Bain was to move to LinkedIn, because I was still too scared to leave my full-time job. It was just that I needed a more chill job. So I was like, okay, it can't be possible that I can't continue doing this with Bain because the working hours were too long and it was too mentally draining for me to do both. So I switched from Bain to LinkedIn, which was more creative because I was a creator manager there. So it was actually very in line with what I was doing. I was building with the team at LinkedIn, we were building the creator ecosystem for LinkedIn. So it was very, very in line with my content creation job. So it almost felt like an extension of it. And I got to meet a lot of cool people. I would connect and talk to a lot of creators, actually. So that was great. And then I think sometime 7-ish months into the job, I realized that I'm still not doing justice to what I set out to do, which was, if I want to focus on one thing and if I want to grow one thing, it doesn't happen if you have your feet in two boats, which is like not really taking the risk and being like, yeah, I'm going to play it safe so that I always have this safety backup option. And you've got to go all in, I think, to figure if you really, really like what you're doing and if you can really make something out of it, because that's the only time you see change. So I decided that, you know what, okay, I have the skills. I was confident that I have the skills that if I want to come back to the job market, like the full-time job market, I can just reapply, you know. And I mean, it may sound odd to you because I think people outside are still very used to taking gap years. But in India, it's very uncommon. Like taking a gap year or taking a year off to do something it's of your own is very, very uncommon. It's like your path is structured for you. So I think there were two things. One was breaking out of the fact that what society tells you to do, which is what our Indian society basically has it all mapped out. So you're in college. By the second year, I already had my job. So I hadn't even finished college and I already knew what I'm going to be doing the year after I finish college. And in school, you have the same thing. You already know which university do you want to go to and you're already preparing for it. So you have no time between school and uni. You have zero time. Like we had like 2 months between that. And then between my uni and job, I had no time. So, you know, I never had time to really think or allow myself to think that there is another path that I could pick or choose. So when I was at LinkedIn, I decided, okay, you know what, let me just take 1 year and see where I am the next year. And if I feel like by then that I really like it and it's worth it and I'm able to sustain myself off it and everything kind of sounds like what it would be, then I think taking the risk, like the upside is so much. Sure. If it sucks, the downside will be bad, but the upside is so much better. I think that was something that really changed my mind. And I was reading Tim Ferriss's book recently, The 4-Hour Workweek, and he mentioned something very similar. And he said this one thing in the book, which I think I implemented before I read it, which was that rather than asking for permission, ask for forgiveness, which was basically like, I didn't want to ask a lot of people and take a lot of advice from different people because that is when I think people slip, when you start asking everybody around you that should I do this, because it's an insecurity of your own and people have their own opinions and everyone will say different things to you. So at that point of time, I really just heard my own calling in a thing and I was just like, okay, I have to take the plunge. And yeah, so I quit against a lot of, like, my managers were like, what are you doing? You're leaving LinkedIn, probably like one of the best companies in the world, to do what again? And yeah, I just let it go. And for one, and I have to say that the 1 year was, I think, the most rewarding year, because from June 2022 to now, when I was at June 2022, I had one platform which I was at, which was Instagram, and I had a community of 250,000 people. And now I have a community of, I think, 1.3 million spread across 4 different social media channels. So I think I see the, like, it's numbers, of course, but it's been like huge just because I dedicated my time and my energy to one thing. So yeah.
So when you left your job, when you left your LinkedIn job, you had 250,000 followers on Instagram.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. So, and now there's YouTube, now there's like LinkedIn, there's Twitter, there's just so much going on because, like I said, I was only able to scale. I was only able to think beyond what I was doing once I had this mental space to be able to do that. So yeah.
Hard to believe that you weren't on LinkedIn, even though you were working for LinkedIn.
Yeah, it's really funny. I mean, I used to do it a little bit, but after looking at the LinkedIn interface the whole day at work, you get pretty sick of it. So
yeah. Yeah, now your followers are what, 4 times, 5 times? as many as when you left your full-time job, which was like, you said June 22. So that's like a year and like 5 months ago, which is crazy.
It is crazy, but it also just, I think, shows me, and it's very reassuring for myself and like for anyone who listens to this, is that if you really, I feel like, set an intention and give it like your all, I think, I don't know, I feel like it always does work out. It's not going to be easy, but it will work out. It may take longer, shorter, but in my head, it always does work out. So yeah.
Yeah, and it did. I mean, now you're traveling. It's amazing. How can I picture like a, I guess, regular week, if there even is like a regular week for you, like or like a day or whatever, like just like a sneak peek.
I think like you said, it's very hard to pinpoint what a regular week looks like because it depends on which time of the month, where am I, etc. But I think I always joke about this with my manager as well, that I live like two alternate lives. One is when I'm back at home, or like I'm back in India doing a lot of like business side of things, the work on that side. And one is when I'm traveling and doing all the creative side. So I feel like it's like two completely different alternate lives. So if I had to tell you a day in my life when I'm traveling, it would be more of like wake up, just have all my devices charged, very important, and leave for, you know, whatever I'm planning on doing, be it. And that's, I think, the best part, because when you actually talk, when I actually hear myself talk about it, it's so much fun, because I'm usually leaving for like a hike or something really fun and something cool, meeting like maybe a tribe or a really good community. And I'd probably, if I'm doing an interview, then I would probably have a couple of questions prepared, similar to how probably you decided to do the podcast with me. So I'd have like a couple of talking points that I'd want to know. So I have all of that ready. And that day mostly looks like that. And then I'd come back and maybe go, hopefully try to fit in a quick workout either at home or wherever I am. And then I would definitely transfer all my data. That's really, really important. Nothing more important than transferring your data, because losing data is the most painful thing, I think, as a travel creator. And yeah, then go to bed and repeat. I think that's what a normal day would look like for me when I'm traveling. And when I'm working, it, like I said, it looks very different. That looks more traditional, more boring. I usually have like a team connect with my entire team. Definitely connect with my manager. Then I end up working on my videos. That's when I edit. So when I'm at home, when I come back is when I kind of process all the videos that I've shot, all everything that I've filmed. I try to process it in different ways. So I have, like I mentioned, I have different social media platforms. So that one piece of content goes out in a lot of different ways for different platforms, but depending on what each platform is based on. So LinkedIn would be like, here are the four things I learned from this tribe, or like, I met someone who runs the oldest business in the world. Here's what I learned from them. Instagram would be like a more short, crisp video. YouTube would be like, okay, now let's work on a script for a more long form video. And yeah, Twitter would be more concise and quick. So I would kind of do that. And then normal day looks like spending time with family, which I really like when I'm back home, spending time with my friends, because I think as a travel creator, that's probably the hardest thing, is maintaining and keeping your relationships intact with people who you've been with for a long, long time, which is something I generally also struggle with. So I would say that's my hardest job. So I do that and yeah, go work on fitness again and go to bed. So that's what my normal day would look like.
I mean, that sounds amazing. And I was taking notes when you were like saying how to like publish the same piece of content on different social media platforms. So when I publish this podcast, I'll try to do the same. One thing that I'm curious about is, because I also been traveling a lot and like living on a different continent. And I do really believe exploring the world is the most fulfilling thing you can do. At least in my experience, it can also be overwhelming and hard sometimes, because it can be a lot, and like you mentioned, it can be hard to like stay really connected to the people you love and take care of yourself and like connect with your inner self as well. Do you have a strategy how you do that when you like basically when you travel so much?
That's a great question. I've never really spoken about this, but I think, yeah, for sure, When it comes to traveling, it is, like you said, the most fulfilling thing I think that anyone can ever do, which is what my mission of my life mission is, basically to connect more travelers and to get people to travel more, because I genuinely feel that the world is a better place if people travel more, because you just get out of your bubble and get to meet people. And there's so many things that you have as preconceived notions. Even I did when I was growing up, because that's just what media portrays to you. When I say media, it's not just news, but like just TV shows that you watch, everything, right? So like I grew up watching mostly American TV shows. So my views are dictated by that, fortunately or unfortunately. And so that's how you end up seeing the world. And I think that's such a limited view. And only when you step out of that bubble, traveling alone does make a big difference as well, because then you're really stepping out of your bubble. You don't have any of your friends kind of to fall back onto. You have to talk to newer people. So I do feel that traveling is like the, like people say, the only thing that you spend on that makes you richer as a person. So I definitely feel that that's so true. But at the same time, it's also hard when you're doing it consistently. So there are a lot of things that I have learned along the way. So for example, when I left my job, I thought that now there's no reason for me to stay at one place, basically. Like I should be on the move constantly, because that's my responsibility as a travel creator. Like I should be moving all the time. I should be exploring new destinations all the time. And it was like going from one place to another every 15 days, moving. It was really, really hectic. So I think that was actually the fastest burnout I ever had, was a travel burnout. Within 6 months, I was just like, damn, I'm so tired. Because what ends up happening, I think, with traveling, that people don't realize, because people usually take like one trip or three trips, let's say max, in a year. But I think when you're traveling constantly, is the number of micro decisions that you have to make when you're traveling. So if you think about it, just a normal day of when you're traveling, you've got to think about where to eat every single meal. You need to think about what mode of transportation to take, what saves you the most money. There are 10 beaches, which beach to go to. There are 10 hikes, which hike to pick. In addition to that, I need to create content. So I also need to think of, okay, where is my energy best put in? Like where should I focus my energy in all of the things that are available to me? So it's not like this one big decision, but like there are so many micro decisions that you're making throughout the day that it is really tiring for your brain, I think, after a point. So that was one thing that I learned, that traveling slower is way more enriching than traveling as fast as I was. So this year I really slowed down. Like I mentioned, I went to Turkey for a month, and now I am taking those breaks. Like if I'm doing a trip to Kerala now for 8 days, then I'm also going to spend 2 weeks in Germany doing, like, seeing maybe things around, but not this like active sort of traveling and having other things figured out for me. So taking it a bit easy. I think that's one lesson, big lesson that I learned for myself as a creator, probably not for everybody because they don't travel as much, but that's one thing. And I think the second thing, like you said, valuing relationships and staying grounded, because I remember what started happening also when I was moving so fast is that I kind of lost touch with what my reality is. It was kind of like 1 month I'm in Switzerland, one the next week I'm in Budapest, and then I'm in, I don't know, Indonesia, and I'm meeting all these different people. Sometimes I'm hanging out with someone who just left their full-time job and they're just like on this backpacking trip. I'm spending time with them, listening to their stories. The next month I'm with a couple that's, I don't know, they're on their vacation. So it was like a lot of living, like a lot of different lives really, really quickly. And obviously in that time, I remember not having that much of a connection with my friends, because I was always so busy and I was always on the move. And so much would happen in my 1 week that when I would like kind of catch up with them, it would kind of feel like everything else is the same. And I've just like moved in this really like fast direction somewhere else. So it always felt very disorienting, that what's happening, what am I doing? I don't know how to describe this perfectly, but it was really weird, the feeling. And it really didn't feel like I was connected to anyone back home. So I think that was another conscious decision I made last year, that I am going to, no matter what, take out time every week, have to connect with my mom and dad regularly, at least every 2 days. I do a video call with my mom when I'm traveling, or speak to my dad, which is, it's really weird, but it is. I mean, by the end of the day, when you have to take out time, it's tough. And then I have to talk to my friends. So I pick like times and slot it in, because I really need to stay connected to feel grounded and also to feel like connected in the normal space of life that I have back home. So yeah.
Like, I mean, I can totally connect, obviously. Like, I've been living here in California for like around 4 years, and like it's hard. Like, the time difference is also a big thing, at least for me. I mean,
exactly.
Now it's like 10 p.m. for me and like 10 a.m. for you, 10:30, I guess. One thing that I'm curious about is, I guess, then it is kind of cool then if you have like a community of like friends who also travel, right? And like who like share this lifestyle, which obviously not everyone will, but like if people do it, it kind of makes it easy.
Yeah, I think that is actually so true. That's something I forgot to mention, that I think that's my favorite part of traveling slower as well, because what ended up happening, and this honestly only happens when you travel slow, in my opinion, because all the trips that I've done that have been very fast, I made some friends there, but I can't call up any of them at like 2 a.m. or like when I need to talk to somebody. But like, for example, I lived in Sri Lanka for a pretty long time. I stayed in Thailand for pretty long. And all my friends from there are still really good friends of mine. And I travel with them now. So in Sri Lanka, I met Julian. Julian made me meet three of his other friends, and everyone is like really heavily big on traveling. So it was so good to now have like this big group of friends that are like, everyone loves to travel. All of us share like a, I wouldn't even say similar lifestyle, but similar vision. So I think that was great. And one of the other friends, I met this girl called Elena, who's, we have like a big age gap, but she's one of my best friends because I always tell her that I feel like she's just, if I would be 10 years older, that's who I'm going to be, kind of. So she's a digital nomad as well, has always traveled. I met her in Sri Lanka, and now we've taken 3 trips since the time we met in Sri Lanka. So I think that is one beautiful thing that traveling has given me, is that I've met people who I wouldn't have ever otherwise met. And they kind of, and I didn't even know that people think the same way as I do, but everyone does. I feel like there are very few unique ideas that you have and unique feelings that you have, which I think is beautiful in a way, because you can connect with so many people then. So I met her and I was just like, wow, there's somebody who thinks exactly like me, which is creepy, but also so cool, because I would never meet that person back home because no one thinks that way. So that is amazing. The traveling brought me closer to a very different community of people that I now call like some of my closest friends. So yeah,
that's super relatable. And Julian also introduced me to you, or you to me. And like, I've been telling him for like years that slow traveling is better than fast traveling. Now you're telling him too. Maybe he like starts realizing it.
He is changing. I think he in fact slowed me down even further. Because in Turkey, when I was with him and Jonas in Turkey, I wanted to do 3 trips and he was just like, no, I'm too tired. Because obviously he's done way more countries than I have. And I think it's really cool, like you said, that I've met someone like him who's also traveled a lot more and has done a lot of other things that I haven't done yet. So for example, when we were in Turkey, the trip that I told you, the unplanned one, because we wanted to save money. And like I said, our Airbnb was in the middle of nowhere. So he was just like, you know what, we're just going to hitchhike everywhere. And that is something that I haven't done. So I got to experience that part with him. And it was, I think, one of my most fun travel experiences ever. So, and I want to do so much more of that. So that's something that I've learned from him as well, considering that he's traveled so much. But yeah, I know that he wants to slow down now, considering the number of countries he's done so fast. So yeah.
That's cool. And like, yeah, he also introduced me to hitchhiking, I think, kind of, at least. Like, he said you should do it. So I started doing it. And it's, yeah, I mean, it's like the purest form of spontaneous traveling, I guess. You never know when you arrive, but you never know who you meet. But it always turns out to be like a cool experience, I feel like.
100%. Yeah, I think it's like, it's almost like you should maybe try this out. You should try it out, like these mini podcasts with people you're hitchhiking with. That would be so cool.
That
imagine.
Would be so
like,
cool,
just
actually.
Quick hitchhiking podcast, because that's what it is. Like, you meet people and then you just spend like straight up 1 hour with them talking about their life, and somehow people are more, everyone who picks you up, I think they also are more open in general, because they are open to picking up hitchhikers. And then I think they're like very open and they're ready to share like more about themselves, and you can share. It's beautiful. I really love it. It's amazing.
So you hitchhike in Turkey, right? Do people speak English there, or how does it work with the language?
It was barely anybody that spoke English. There were, I think, we checked quite a bit, because what ended up happening is that we weren't going very far distances, right? So it wasn't like what Julian has done once, I think, is hitchhiking from Germany to Barcelona or something, which is just crazy. But we were hitchhiking from one town to another. So it was more shorter rides. but lots of different people. So sometimes we'd meet English speaking people, but mostly it was Turkish. But even then it was so nice. Like they would, I mean, Google Translate is a blessing in disguise. I don't know how people like our parents who used to travel, how did they travel before without Google Translate? I have no idea. But yeah, it's so cool. We would like use that and kind of talk to them. And everyone was really open. And I think the most special experience we had was that we were standing, for example, if it was a two-way road, we were standing on the other side and we had to go, let's say, this way. And the cars were going that way and this way. So we were hoping we'd stop a car here. And then a car stopped that was going the other way. And they stopped on the other side of the road. And we tried to tell them that, thank you so much for stopping, but we're going this way, no worries. And they were just like, no, no, come here. So we go to them. And they were like, where do you want to go? And we kind of told them that we're going for this hike and we want to reach the hiking point. And they were just like, okay, cool. And then they were like, we'll turn around and we'll take you there.
No.
And we were so confused because we thought, because they weren't speaking in English. So I Google translated it again. And I was like, no, we're not going this way. We're going that way. And they were like, yes, we understand. Come sit. We'll take you that way. And they were so nice. They took us the other way. And then they stopped at all the cool viewpoints because they were from Turkey and they've been here before. So they were like, there are lots of cool viewpoints all the way. We can stop and show them to you. And we stopped at like two different points. They took us down to like the best place where you could see the ocean and this like beautiful beach. And only the guy knew that spot. There was no one around. We went there. And I was just like, that is so nice. And I think these experiences you can only have when you're spontaneous and like have an open heart. And yeah, it was amazing. And they actually dropped us by going the other way and then went back their way because they were like, we're not doing anything. We're also just traveling. So it's okay.
That's amazing. So we're two promoters of the hitchhike for sure. Like this is such a hitchhiking story that like you wouldn't like experience in like any other surrounding or way, I guess.
100%. So yeah, it was amazing.
Fast forward, like this was like a month ago, right?
This was a month ago.
Okay, fast forward one month. You back in India, and now we just have to talk about this because it's so amazing. You on the cover of Forbes India, right? Is that correct?
Yeah.
Isn't that like okay? You just have to, can you like tell me how like this started and like how I mean I obviously saw the cover, how the photo shoot was and like how this like all came together.
Yeah, honestly, I still every time I look at the magazine, I still find it very surreal to see. It almost feels fake. You know, it feels like I photoshopped myself there. It feels really weird. This weird out of body experience. It was very surreal. I mean, even when I got the call, I remember I was in Turkey, actually. And when I got the call, I was like, this can't be real. And I was like, there's some sort of a weird prank. And I remember telling my manager, and because earlier they called me for an interview. And then at the interview, they said, yeah, are you available on this date for the shoot? And I was like, what shoot? And so that was crazy. And I think in general, Forbes is also very secretive with who else is coming because they want that excitement to be there and they want the list to be extremely fresh when it's out there. So no one knows. And so I had no idea I was going to be on the cover because we'd not had that conversation. They just said there's a shoot happening and for Forbes India, like there's a digital stars list and there are three other creators and you're one of the four. So you've got to come. So I had no idea what's going to happen. What's exactly going to be the point of this entire thing. But the interview was great. I think the reason, I mean, what Forbes India does is it takes out, and not just Forbes India, like Forbes in general. So a month prior to that, the Forbes global list had come out, which is the top 100 creators in the world, where I think Mr. Beast was number 2. And, you know, you have this entire list coming out and then the other smaller regions follow. So India being one of them, because I think India is also a huge market for Forbes. So they come up with their list after that. So I knew what was happening. I knew that you have the Forbes top 100 list where they have all the creators from different backgrounds and stuff. But just imagining a travel creator on the cover was surreal because honestly, travel is one, I would say, segment that is still, even though it's like there are a lot of travel creators in the world, very few travel creators have really worked towards creating a sustainable business as well on the side. So I think that was one of the key reasons why Forbes ended up talking to me about my journey as well, because I've now started focusing a lot more as well on how can I make the industry better overall? What can I do to give back and sort of do it in a meaningful way? So, for example, in India, I launched the first travel hacking course here, which was basically how people can travel better, smarter, save money, and did that. Then I do creator courses. I have my own digital products, and I have a lot more coming in the pipeline. So that was one of the reasons as well. And since I mentioned that since last year to now, in India, I was the fastest growing travel creator. So we spoke about that a little bit. So it was amazing. And the shoot was really, really fun. I think one of the most, it's that I always tell people to step out of their comfort zone. And usually when I say that, I mean like, go hitchhiking or spend 10 days camping outside and, you know, being outside of your comfort zone. But this was so out of my comfort zone for me, because I'm never in like glamorous dresses and face full of makeup and stuff. That's not my world at all. So even doing that and being in front of camera in a very different way was very, very cool. And sharing the space with such interesting like creators that honestly I have looked up to. One of the creators that was there with me on the page was someone I'd met this year in March. And I went up to him and I told him how I love his content and I'm a really big fan and my mom loves his content as well. And now I was standing next to him at the cover. So that to me was just like, what is happening? So yeah, that was really cool. The Forbes team was really fun. I remember that one of the shots that we had, the solo shot, was me in a dress. And I told them that, can I please wear sneakers? Because I think that is more me. So let me wear sneakers. Let me hold my, I have like a fanny pack that is something that fanny bag that only I use in, and like everyone kind of identifies me with that. So I was like, let me use that. So it feels a little bit more me. And they were so open to it. So we did that. And it was just like a really fun shoot. And the cover coming out was all, it all feels surreal still. So yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah, interesting to hear also like how you were one of the few travel or content creators traveling that like make a sustainable living out of it. Maybe it's like your consultant mindset helping you out. I don't know. Yeah. So at this point, like you like have this huge audience. You, like you said, you're able to make a living based on it. And just like curious, I think your TEDx talk was called "The Dream to Travel the World is Now My Reality." You achieved the dream. You were just on the Forbes cover. What's next? Like, do you set goals for yourself still? Or like, you already set your life mission, connect travelers and like get people to travel more. What's like your vision for yourself? I guess, broad question, I know.
Wow, what an existential question to ask someone.
You can say like, I want to go skydiving, or like, it can be like super,
yeah.
Or you can say, connect 10,000 travelers.
Yeah, so I definitely believe in setting goals, especially that's become a very big part of like what I do now recently, because earlier I was someone who was very scared of setting goals, to be honest. So even the whole thing that happened within that one, like the 1 year between me leaving my job, I was very scared of setting goals because I was very scared of, I don't know, this weird sense of embarrassment that I would feel if I failed, which is really weird because I'm not like going and, you know, yelling at it from the top of the roof that this is my goal. It's just this weird thing. But I think recently I really have realized how important goal setting is, because it's easier to then direct your energy towards the goals that you set, because otherwise the world's your oyster, right? You can keep doing 10 different things and without having that intention in mind. So now I do have goals. I think it's not really about very like business or developing something crazy. I think the one thing that I really, really, really want to do now in the coming years is step out of my comfort zone even more. So I feel like everything that I've been doing, I've loved all the trips that I've taken so far, but I feel like now I'm ready for kind of the next step, the next challenge in terms of going to places that are really, really remote, that are considered to be, I would say, by the media, dangerous, or not just dangerous, but maybe unexplored. So I really want to see that side of the world more, because I've done a lot of nice, beautiful countries, but now I kind of want to shift my focus to being entirely on people and on the destination being a bit more challenging in itself, because I think that's really exciting to me. And like I said, I really one of my missions has always been to show people that the world is a much nicer place than they imagine it to be. And I know that there are a lot of creators who are doing that, and I've been inspired by them. For example, Yes Theory being one of my favorite YouTube channels in the world. So I think carrying forward that kind of a mission is something that's very integral to me as well. And I think the ultimate vision would always be that I'm able to build something. I'm not sure in what, like, that's something I still have some time to figure out. But like I said, that connecting travelers, like-minded travelers together, and also making the space better in a way, like providing information, helping people in a way that it becomes financially easier, because I do feel that finance is something that really holds people back from traveling, right? So if I can help people save money, then I'm sure that that helps them to travel more. So figuring out what I can do in that space, apart from like me developing the course, which I spoke to you about, but going a little bit beyond that, I think that would be like the twofold goal that now I have for the next couple of years.
I could talk to you forever about this. Like, and we've been chatting about this before. I just want to like give people the opportunity, if they want to like follow your content or like follow you, I guess, traveling, is it the best way to follow you on Instagram, or like, what's your Instagram? How do you want to connect to people?
Yeah. Made a bad decision by keeping my first name as my Instagram because my name is hard to spell, but it is Akanksha Monga. And I think it's easier if you search Monga over Akanksha. So my Instagram is probably my biggest platform in terms of the community that I have, but I also post on YouTube, and that's also by the same name. It's my name, Akanksha Monga. And so I would say these are the best two platforms, but if like you're a consultant, maybe you can find me on LinkedIn as well. So yeah, but I would say my favorite, definitely my best two platforms, are Instagram and YouTube. So yeah, follow along the adventure.
You're a consultant too, and you have your travel like blog name or like your business name in the background. So like,
that's Travel and More. Yeah. So that's basically the part of the vision of building out exactly what I spoke to you about. So that's basically everything to do with traveling smarter, better, and connecting with each other. So it's called Travel and More. I started it last year, and under that side of the company, I've been launching everything that's outside of just creating content.
That's amazing. Akanksha, thank you so much for taking the time today to like talk to me about your traveling and like everything, basically. It's been super nice.
Same here. It was so nice. I absolutely loved talking in this. I can talk about this forever. So it was really, really fun.